You're listening to Unterwegs, the En Route podcast, where we talk about what it means to be en route with Jesus in our day-to-day life. Navigating life and faith in our complex and changing society is hard. Our goal is to keep you unterwegs with Jesus, moving forward as you follow God's calling on your life.
I'm Mike Piccinato, your host on Unterwegs, the En Route podcast, and I'd like to welcome you to episode 18. Today, we're going back to some interviews that we conducted at the beginning of the month. We'll be interviewing several members of the LEAD 2021 Berlin team, people who came from around the United States and spent some time here, 10 days here on a short-term trip. We'll also be talking with TJ Grabianowski, who is on staff with LEAD, and he'll be explaining the program a little bit throughout the show. I'll be popping in and out to kind of MC and guide things through the format that we're using today, and I hope you enjoy today's show.
TJ, it's great to have you here with us. It's been so great to have you bring a team from LEAD here with you. And so maybe just quickly at the beginning, can you introduce yourself?
Yeah. I'm TJ Grabianowski. I am the International Trips Director for the LEAD program. I am coming here from Cleveland, Ohio today, and pretty excited to have some students here that are, getting to experience what's going on here in Berlin.
And right now they're preparing to help us with an event tonight. And so in the background, you'll hear some of those students banging chairs around. They're in a separate room, but it's a brand new space for us, and we're still ironing out some of the bugs on how that works when we're doing things simultaneously. Can you explain the LEAD program a little bit for those who are unfamiliar with it?
Yeah, so the LEAD program was created specifically to train up people that wanted to step farther into ministry, that needed some Bible training, that needed some just some personal development, but didn't want to leave home and didn't want to incur a lot of debt. And so it's specifically built to raise their own personal awareness of themselves and who God's created them to be, while also giving them some doctrinal background to step into leadership in their church, leadership in their community, and maybe even a career position in ministry. And the whole program is intended to be done at less than $5,000. And so hopefully students can do it pretty easily without incurring any kind of debt through the process.
Oh, that's fantastic. And what is your role with the LEAD program?
I jokingly tell everybody that my role is everything else, but mostly my titled roles right now are International Trips Director and Curriculum Director. What that entails is all of our students at the end of their 2.5-year journey, they have to take an international trip to sort of take all of what they've done over 2.5 years and put it into practice. And then the other side of my journey is to keep the curriculum up to date so that they can get to the end of their 2.5 years. So I'm kind of on both ends of the spectrum there.
So as we interviewed some of the students that you have here this week, some of them described the international trip part as a capstone event. Mm-hmm. What does that mean?
Well, so often in education, what happens is you have a lot of input information and not a lot of chance to use it. And so all throughout the program, we're asking our students to put things into practice on a month-over-month basis. So how did this information impact the way that you're living your life day to day? And so then the goal with the capstone experience, the international trip, is that our students would essentially be able to put their entire 2.5-year journey into practice in a 8 to 12 day journey. Into a cross-cultural experience that's going to push them in ways that maybe they didn't expect.
And with that introduction from TJ, we'll move now into the conversation that we had with the LEAD students themselves, two separate conversations with the groups, asked them the same questions, and now we're kind of knitting that conversation together. This is just some excerpts from the conversation we had. Hey guys, why don't you start by introducing yourselves to us?
My name is Misty. I am here from Central New York, from a small town called Oneida.
My name's Nate. I'm here from also a small town, but we're in the Midwest in the Northlands of Minnesota, Detroit Lakes.
Well, I'm Jeremy Pearson from Lock Haven, Pennsylvania. And here I am in Berlin. I kind of stumbled upon it from the LEAD program. I actually graduated a little while ago, but I still had to go on the trip, but Corona kind of interrupted that. And here I am.
And I'm Heidi Hookman from Watertown, South Dakota, also with the LEAD program. And I had a lot of other connections with Berlin. So it was really exciting to be able to go on this trip and reconnect with old friends and family.
And you guys are doing the final project, part of a two and a half year ministry preparation program?
Yes.
Yep.
How has that program been for you?
For me, it's been pretty eye-opening, the amount of stuff that I really just had no clue what the class would bring out as far as the things in the New Testament and the Old Testament. It's just been great.
Yeah, it's been really good at challenging us in a good way. It takes your lifestyle and then it pushes into it and says, this is what we should be doing. Are you doing it? And let us help you do it that way.
And this intercultural experience is one part of that process.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, it's kind of the capstone. You spend a lot of your time developing biblical foundations, who Jesus is, why any of it matters. And then you look toward what makes missions important for the church. And at the very end, you go on your own international trip.
Absolutely. It's kind of a culmination of all we've learned. So it kind of combines all the aspects into one unique experience.
What is one insight that you were maybe ready to have that you couldn't have until you left your normal patterns?
That's kind of a tough one, but I think for me, my prayer life kind of goes up and down. And one thing that has been helpful on this trip is just to see the fruit of you and your prayer walking through the neighborhoods where you now have international workers living and your ministry right here. And I really respect that and feel like that's just gonna help me more to maybe be more intentional when I do go back to the States about walking in my neighborhood, maybe taking some ladies with me from the church and just being able to pray for certain things. So
yeah,
that's great.
Along that line too, I was impacted pretty decently by the prayer walk. And just my struggle is I had gone into vocational ministry. It's almost 2 years now. And I'd gone from, you know, being in the front lines of non-believers and such into being kind of in being around believers, or at least people who are looking for something more than what's there. And so I really struggled with my missional living inside of that context. And so the idea of the prayer walk that we kind of did, you know, this intentionality of, well, who is on my block? Who can I intentionally get to know and invite over and invite into community like that? And then who can I pray over as I'm walking? That was really impactful for me too.
I would say that I've been finding it easier to connect with people. Now, thankfully, mostly everybody here speaks English, so that's kind of a nice crutch to have because my German is miserable. But in a sense, everything kind of feels like home. At first, when I landed here, everything felt different because I've never been to Europe before. But quickly, everything just started to feel homey.
And so it's maybe an insight for you there.
I think it's easy to assume a place is a certain way from all, like, if you only know it from headlines, you don't really know what it's like somewhere else. So there's probably a lot of other places in the world that I'm incorrectly assessing without actually going there to see for myself.
There's a certain level of shared humanity.
Yeah, I've told this story a couple times now, but it really clicked when I was on a walk one day and I just saw this toddler roaring like a lion at a pigeon and just to try and scare it. And it just dawned on me how, even though I can't read any street signs and talk to most people in their native language, nothing really seemed all that different from home.
Kids are kids.
Yeah. And then when you look at the adults and you see them interacting with people, people are people.
Yeah, in some ways I would agree that people are people. And I think getting out of my own comfort zone and coming to a different culture has allowed me to see people in a different way.
And I think that's really important, Heidi, that we see people as people, because as much as there are similarities that we have, kids are kids, there's also complexity there, that people being people means that we also take time to understand what their motivations are and where some of those motivations come from. And that can be really different between cultures. So with some of the insights that you've had from this trip, what are some ways that you can love your neighbor differently when you go back home?
I think for me, maybe just being a little more open-minded or intentional about introducing myself to people in my neighborhood. We do kind of tend to stay in our homes, especially this past year and a half with COVID. But even before that, as I look back, I realized that there probably wasn't enough of myself just getting out there and introducing myself and praying through the neighborhood, just seeing various different things, you know, that probably just need prayer.
I think for me, it'll be a layer of intentionality when I talk with them. I'm very easily drawn into my routines, my busyness, and I get distracted from people. So taking the time to say hi to them when they're outdoors, start up a conversation, and also praying intentionally for them, that God will open up the opportunities for conversation. And if, even if we don't have that opportunity, that they come in contact with someone else. Prayer is the primary work of God's people. And that's something that we've seen over and over, is how God moves when his people pray. So I think even praying for our neighbors, and then also being available to talk to them, being willing to invest in them beyond the surface level conversations.
For me, I would say, I'm overall a pretty social guy, so it's pretty easy to take it for granted. But being in this different culture with different languages around me, it was a nice example of what isolation feels like and what it feels like to be a little lonely when I've walked around and just kind of explored some of the areas. And even through that, it was still easy to connect with people. And to take it home, I would say that it would be so much easier to connect with everything I'm familiar with. And I know what it feels like to be isolated. So I'm a bit more motivated to strike up conversations with people kind of on the sidelines.
For me, how can I be intentionally wading deep into where the lost might be in my community? And
I think that terminology, lostness, might be more offensive than we think it is. What do you mean by that?
I think most people, no matter what their path looks like in life, they tend to be searching for something. A lot of people just don't particularly know what it is they're searching for, so it never quite stops throughout their life.
And I remember as I was growing up, I really struggled with it. I wanted to delve deeper into something, but it seems almost like the process or the system tripped me from going in deeper. And so as I found my faith, that allowed me to, and I was found, you know, digging into my Bible allowed me to go deeper than doing something together at a certain time.
There is a certain level of transcendence that our hearts long for. And so we do look for something that's bigger than ourselves. Most people do.
Oh, yeah. I found myself doing that pretty much up until I was a Christian. Whether it was shopping, money, a substance.
It's funny how much we try to stuff into that emptiness inside of us. And sometimes we can kind of just keep filling up with the noise of, you know, the noise of my job and the noise of this and the noise of that. And so we've got all this ringing in our ears and we still have that hole, but because there's all this noise going on, we think, well, this hole must be filled now because I can't hear it, but it's still there and you feel it inside of you.
one of the places where Jesus used the illustration of loss the most is in the parable of the lost coin and the lost sheep, and then the lost son, which we often call the prodigal son. What are some things that stand out to you about the way Jesus told those stories about things that were lost?
So when I lose something, I'm usually not very worried. I just assume that I'll find it later. But in all those stories, the person who had lost it was very diligent in trying to find what was lost. The woman who lost the coin, you know, swept the whole house until she had found that. The shepherd went out and searched, left all the 99 behind until he had found that lost sheep. I guess the one exception would be the prodigal son, in which the father allowed the son to recognize that he was lost and come home. But even then, when he does, the father runs to him, breaks all cultural barriers to get back to his son and reunited. So I think there's an urgency in that the lost need to be found. And also afterward, that there's always great rejoicing when the lost is found. It's a moment to be celebrated.
Yeah, Heidi's answer was really, really good. I think the only thing to add to it is if you yourself are that last coin or lost sheep, you don't have to worry about being written off by God. You're never too small to not be searched for frantically.
Yeah, even that one coin or that one sheep had incredible value.
Yeah. And the lady never gave up looking for the coin after just a quick look around. It was just a frantic searching. Like, I need this coin back.
You guys had the experience to attend two culturally different services on Sunday. Misty, you went to one that was in Spanish and one that was in Arabic. And Nate, you did German English and then Arabic in the evening. Jeremy, you preached at a Spanish-speaking church and had to work with a translator, and then attended the Arabic-speaking church later on Sunday evening. And then Heidi, you were with at the German English speaking church and then went to the Arabic speaking church later on. What did you learn from those experiences, or what struck you?
I learned that there are different ways that people worship, different ways that people have services at their church. And I just thought they were both beautiful. You know, I didn't know what they were saying, but Carmen had an absolutely beautiful voice, you know, during worship, and Jeremy did a great job. In the Arabic church, I really enjoyed it. It had like a nice sense of community, you know, like they were talking back and forth with the pastor there, you know, during the sermon. And I just thought that it was nice, beautiful, really.
So I had the opportunity in both times to spend time with children, and something that just kind of hit me as I was journaling that evening, it's kids are kids. You know, there are a lot of social constructs that we erect as we grow older, but kids are kids. Kids want to play. Kids want to have fun. Kids want to participate with you. Kids want to participate with each other. And culture doesn't mean much, you know. Like, it's funny. I was at the Arab church. The children spoke their native language. They also spoke German, which actually probably is their native language too, because they're young. And I only speak English. I have a little German, but not enough to really communicate well. And so these kids, you know, they're rattling off sentences, and they just want me to play. I mean, it's come over here and play this with me. You know, I want to do this over here. And it's just, there's a reason why the Bible points us towards children to really understand what faith is like, because it's looking at that joy and that faith inside of children. It's beautiful.
Well, at the Spanish church where I was preaching, just the gospel's so universal that I was able to convey a message cross-culturally. I had a wonderful translator to help me out, but the message meant as much to the people I was speaking to, who I really didn't even know, as it did to me. And it's kind of energizing. We don't have to go that far out of our way to connect with people through the gospel. At the Arabic church, I could not understand a word of it, but you could feel the spirit there, and it was really neat to watch.
Yeah, so I got kicked out to play with the kids both times, which is very enjoyable to me. And in the German church, most of the kids spoke English. In the Arabic church, the kids knew very little English, but still being able to play with them, to interact with them, to share smiles and laughter is something that crosses the cultural bounds of language. And we were able to get by with what little German we had, and they with their little English, and show God's love in a tangible way just by spending time with them, so that they knew that they were valued too. They weren't a sideline issue, but they're part of the church as well.
We're going to jump back to talking again with TJ as he explains a little bit more about the goals and purposes of these lead trips.
One of the goals, as you explained it to me as we were putting the trip together, was to push them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we really want to see this. This is kind of our last chance from an organizational standpoint to see these leaders before we sort of certify them as potential leaders to others in their communities, in the Christian Missionary Alliance. And this is our last chance to really see what they are. And so we want to intentionally put some stress on them to see if they're going to be able to handle that stress in a leadership position.
And in the lead program, you talk about four buckets.
Yeah.
And those four buckets are?
They are your emotional bucket, your physical bucket, your spiritual bucket, and your intellectual bucket.
So we've been pushing on a lot of those this week.
We have. There's been a ton of information just because Berlin is just a historic city, and being able to, I told someone I was hanging out with yesterday, he asked me, do you want to see anything else? Is there anything you haven't seen yet? I said, I might, but my brain is full. You've packed a lot of information in. It's been amazing. I mean, I'm calculating right now that I've walked somewhere between 65 and 75 miles in 10 days, and I don't do that. So my physical bucket is near empty. Going to, a concentration camp and really just standing where people who truly suffered stood. I mean, that really, really leans on the emotional bucket and drains that emotional energy from you. And so being able to realize where you're at and actually sit down and take a rest or take a nap or whatever it takes to keep that going. And so, yeah, we've really gotten kind of leaned into all of them. It's been an amazing week, and we're really seeing some good things out of these leaders.
And then that last bucket is the spiritual bucket,
right?
Which is sometimes a little more challenging to lean into. So we've been trying to push people out of their comfort zones a little bit. And one of the things we did with them, well, two of the things, one, we did very deliberate morning and evening liturgical prayer times together, almost a modern monastic type of events surrounded by a lot of other things. And then another very deliberate creative artistic meditation that coming into the event, you said, man, I'm going to hate that.
Yep. I think my exact words were, I'm definitely going to hate that, but let's do it.
Because I'm definitely going to hate that. But what was your experience with that?
I have been kind of shocked at how much I've enjoyed that creative piece. Sort of having that time to meditate on one scripture and then do something that wasn't necessarily words with it is sort of a new process for me. I don't generally, I can usually use words fairly well to put my thoughts into, into some form of something that can be presented, but to then It took my thoughts and my feelings to a level that maybe I couldn't have expressed, which was a really neat thing for me personally. And then to see what some of our students put together, both in words and not in words, but being able to just step farther into being able to understand how to process some of the emotions they were feeling, because that's a lot of times what doesn't happen in our in our institutional churches. We just expect people to kind of move on from things, and to give them space to process some of the more challenging things in ways that might not necessarily be able to go, you know, pen and paper. It's such a cool thing. I had so much fun with it. And I actually anticipate taking it home and doing something like that with my kids in the near future. Just the, I think that some of my kids, my daughter especially, is, I think that it would be so beneficial for her because she has a really, really hard time, especially when she's worked up, being able to put any sort of words to what she's feeling. And to be able to teach her how to use a different medium, I'm just like, oh man, this is fantastic. And to then be able to help her see, like, okay, show me how you're feeling about God right now. Show me in movement or in drawing or in paint or, you know, whatever you need to show me. I think it's a really, it's a challenge to us to try to listen differently too, right? Like, how do we listen to people that maybe don't have the words to express what they're feeling?
And it's a really good piece of that spiritual bucket, I think, that in that case, almost discovering that our existing spiritual bucket has a false bottom. Mm. And there's more space in there than we think that there really is, right, in that bucket as we tie in. In some ways, it's almost a more holistic piece. It brings some of those emotional pieces into the spiritual realm in ways that we're almost strangely uncomfortable with in the normal church.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, it's just so easy. And especially, I mean, we're essentially an academic institution, right? So we're doing a ton of listening to lectures and writing papers. And so just sort of having that little extra and realizing that there is more to it than just being able to express it academically is really, I mean, it's an amazing piece. And I'm super grateful for that piece of our trip.
Well, thanks so much for joining us for today's show. If you are interested in learning more about the LEAD program, I've put a link to their program in the show notes, and you can be sure to look them up on the web or write to them if you're interested in participating and growing in your own leadership abilities. There's also ways for you to contact us in the show notes, send us an email, join our conversation on our Discord server. We'd love to hear from you.
Unterwegs, the En Route podcast, is a production of I Am Intercultural, a division of Exigent Communication, in partnership with Envision Berlin. Please like, share, and subscribe. Podcast music is by Mike Picanato.